So I've had a little bit of a summer cold this week. Lots of stuffiness. My wife makes fun of me because I spend most of my day sitting under air conditioning. And she's like, well, what's your deal? No wonder you're stuffy. Are you hot? And I'm like, yeah, I'm hot. It's July. But yeah. It's led to some really good dad sneezes. We're all dads here. Do you guys have the classic dad sneeze?
The one that you exaggerated at the end,
the ones that are slow, loud, people expect to look over and just see a puff of smoke where you used to be.
Yeah, I project it. Not just volume, but extra stuff too.
I always imagine it's like that movie. It was a terrible, like, knockoff making fun of superhero X-Men movie. But there's a scene where it's like, yeah, we've got some that you don't really hear about, like this guy. And it shows like a guy whose superpower is like deftly sneezes, and he turns and sneezes at somebody and their head falls off. That's a dad sneeze.
Soccer chat with two T's, because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga. So it's like a play on words. And, you know, Chattanooga is a soccer city.
So when you were saying summer cold, I thought at first you were saying summer cult, and which would be a very different conversation, because I figured it'd be too warm to wear the robes.
I'll call you later about that.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a secret password you're going to have to know to get in. Just saying.
Welcome to Soccer Chat. Season whatever. I don't care what episode.
Episode something.
To all of our acolytes.
So I think the obvious place to start the episode, there was a bit of news that came out Friday as we were releasing the podcast.
Wait, what? Something happened?
If you were actually paying attention to the game on Saturday, you might have noticed
that Jimmy was coaching.
Yeah, Jimmy was coaching. However, right. It was not Coach Jimmy Obleda.
Oh.
League announced a suspension pending an investigation. The team is cooperating. There has been a grievance filed through the Players Association. We don't know exactly when the suspension is going to end. We don't know the progress of the investigation. We know the team is cooperating with the investigation and that Coach Jimmy was not on the sideline Saturday. I don't expect him to be on the sideline this coming Saturday in Omaha either. Jimmy Weekly has taken over those duties. The rest of the staff, of course, is there working with the players. So what do you two make of the little bit of news that has come out? Of course, Jiminy Cricket handling PR for the team, Players Association making some statements, but not really giving tons of news. What do you guys make of it?
Well, you can't really, if something is under investigation, you cannot say very much at all. Anytime you see under investigation, you're not going to hear much because it'll impede the investigation. So that's the thing we have to always remember when you see that. Having said that, if it got this far, it's probably not good.
Yeah, so they released, USL Players Association is who filed the actual complaint. And here's their statement that was also released on Friday. It says the USLPA has raised allegations of misconduct by Chattanooga Red Bulls head coach Jimmy Obleda with the USL. The USLPA will continue to be supportive of the USL investigation in this matter. Here's the part where somewhat they're alluding to what's going on. They said the USLPA encourages current and former players and staff with information relating to discrimination, harassment, abuse, or bullying within the USL, whether in connection with this incident or other matters, to contact the USLPA directly. That says to me that the USLPA in its own sort of way is kind of giving insight into there's some sort of either bullying or other form of abuse that's been alleged. And it's alleged. We don't know the results of it. I will say, however, that for them to go to the step of doing a suspension, it's got to be something more than just he said a mean thing to me, right? It's got to be something that would raise them to say, if this is true, some form of suspension, whether it's a couple games, the rest of the year, lifetime, whatever that extension of suspension is within the USL, they're saying that if this allegation is true, some form of suspension would be provided in that scenario, and that they have enough information to say, we think it's likely that we need to suspend him immediately. My understanding is the team knew nothing about this until Friday. I mean, Thursday was Coach Jimmy's birthday. The team was going business as usual with that. They posted, you know, video of him celebrating his birthday along with the player's birthday by doing like a run through where they're throwing water on him, things like that. On Thursday, team's made aware on Friday, the team makes their statement. Players Association and USL make theirs, and that's really all you can get from it, right? Like, as Jeff alluded to, you're not going to get more than that until it comes out. And I think even when it comes out, you may not get a lot of information about what it was, other than we've concluded our investigation, and here's what the results of that investigation are. Because for two reasons: one, it protects the player from retaliation, and it protects the coach from retaliation if it's turned out that they don't do anything more than he's being reinstated back on whatever the allegation is, if the allegation turns out to not be true, right? So I don't think either way we're ever going to find out exactly what the allegation was, but I do think it's reasonable to expect, if we don't hear something by this week, early next week, we should have a result and knowledge of how long the suspension is and how much of an impact it'll make to the rest of the Red Bull season.
So the news got out, the news was released, I should say, and Knives came out for all the people, all the usual people who don't like the team automatically jumping to the conclusions of the worst possible scenario. You know, the whole thing to me is tough because I want the players to feel supported. And it's why, you know, we're not storming the field in support of Coach Jimmy with this investigation. We all want that to play out, and we want the truth to get out. If there is something that happened, we want the players to feel like they matter and their voices are heard.
Yep.
We all have had personal dealings with Jimmy Obleda, and we like him. We've always talked about liking his passion. I think we all could agree that there's a possibility that that passion could have boiled over, especially in some of these periods of the season where the team hasn't looked good. And there's room in what's going on for, it's not the worst case scenario that he's going to have to be fired and he's never going to work in coaching again, that it was something that he's going to be suspended for 3 games. He's going to learn an important lesson and he's going to come back and be a better coach. And I think what we all want is something like that, that allows the team to reconcile, to be able to move forward, players and coaches, after all of this gets investigated and we find out what the final decision is. And so I don't want to hear anything from anyone else outside the team about what's going on. You know, former players with the Knives out, people who don't like us, didn't like Jimmy, you know, Coach Obleda never really bothered to work at making friends in the league. He's here to compete against everyone and has done that. You know, I hope that whatever this is, he learns a lesson from it, comes back stronger, unless, you know, we find out the truth and it's something where stuff has to move on. But I still feel like we all don't have to jump to that conclusion that this is the worst, this could have been the worst possible scenario that's going to completely damage him.
And I'm personally not jumping to that scenario, but I do want to hold, it is a possibility, right? Like,
right.
We don't know what we don't know. Like, we have insight into him from, you know, personal conversation with him. And as you mentioned, we've always had good personal conversations, seeing him on the sidelines, how engaged he really is with the fans. It's not just lip service. He genuinely wants his players and himself to be involved with the fans, with the fan groups, things like that. From that standpoint, we've all also seen how much he just really is just very vocal on the sidelines, and that plays well with some and terrible with others, right?
Right.
And so we just don't know how that is playing out. I will say, it all comes for me. I, if somebody feels like they're in a hostile scenario, I want them to be comfortable to be able to bring that forward. But I also recognize I want it to be a reasonable and level-headed decision, right? So, and I kind of mentioned this to both you guys off the podcast. If it's a verbal thing where he took it too far verbally and it's something that can be rectified with, like you said, with 3-game suspension, whatever that is, I'm okay with that if that means he corrects. But I think the other side of it is, what is the line going forward for him, and how much does he lose his locker room because of it is my worry from a play standpoint. Personal standpoint, I would love for it to get rectified, the relationship with the players to be able to be corrected between him and the players that may have brought this forward, and that there isn't animosity there. But that's got to be hard to overcome.
I don't know. Again, we don't know what the accusation is. We have observed his behavior. He's a very vocal person. He's very passionate. He's very aggressive. And, you know, as Adam was saying, you know, this can come off in a very strong way. But he's never he's always hot. He's always on. But I don't know if, depending what the, you know, what the actual accusations are, I can't imagine being just suspended would be enough to rectify. I would imagine and I would hope there would be some other kind of way for him to work out these things. And I hope that there's a resolution that, you know, that there's a way to adjust behavior, to change behavior. He's a coach, and a coach is all about pivoting. Is all about realizing the situation you're in and changing and adjusting. And I hope he has that same approach, but I don't know if the league has the resources available to help him if he needs, whether some kind of management or some kind of, not to say counseling. I don't know what it would entail, but I can imagine just not coaching wouldn't be enough. Hopefully that there's some other kind of assistance. Oh, does that make sense?
Yeah. So I don't want to harp too much because we just don't know, right? So yeah. I think ultimately, right. I think to sum it up, it's if it's really bad and they do the investigation and he's gone, that is disappointing because we've gotten to know him and really like him as a person. But at the same time, we do expect USL and the Red Wolves to hold him accountable for being taking correct action with his players. If it's not that bad and they're able to suspend and he's able to rectify that, great too. I'm happy either way, as long as a true investigation is done and one that brings to light what really happened. And if they make a decision that is the correct one, I'm gonna go with that. It doesn't take away my personal experiences with Jimmy and the fact that as a person, I've had very good experience, but I'm not one of his players, so I don't know what that's like. But if Jimmy, if you listen to this at all, this is not us disparaging you to say, hey, if he's gone, he's gone. That's not what we mean by this. It's just if that's what USL comes to based off their investigation, the team has to take that and move on from there. And if it's not, then he needs to figure out how to work out with his players. That's actually probably harder, really, scenario for the team than if he is let go when it comes to mid-season like this. So let me ask that question to you, Alex. If it's like it was the first year and we're transitioning away from our original head coach to secondary coaches, do you think they stick with a Jimmy Weekly running it from more of a, or do you think they would be looking outside the team? Because he, I believe, is the only one that really has the coaching licenses that are typically required.
I think it could be possible for Jimmy Weekly. It may be difficult. He in the area is moving to take over one of the local select soccer programs. I don't know if that's news or announced, or but you know, we both were part of the Red. We were both part of the Red Wolves Academy where he had been coaching, and then he moved to take this other one. Those new responsibilities might make it hard for him to be the full-time presence on the sideline. You know, he's there as an assistant. He helps run practices. He may do that. You know, thinking about our next topic, we're going to talk about the game. I don't feel like the team was much different. Of course, a lot of that stuff was set on Friday, but
yeah.
You know, he's a good coach. He's a good guy. Here again, I've had nothing but great interactions with Jimmy Weekly. But he also is not a person that normally is talked about in circles as, you know, professional soccer head coach. He's done a lot of operations type things with the team, more than necessarily being an assistant coach. This time of year is probably hard to find guys who are looking for opportunities. College coaches are getting into their college seasons. Pro teams are getting started, you know, in a lot of other places for the fall season. So it's not like there's a huge cast of other coaches that you would look for and bring in. Yeah. You may have to just finish the season with Jimmy Weakley and the staff. I have pretty strong faith in those guys. They're all good, smart coaches that the players, I think, have pretty good interaction with.
Yeah, we have
I will say at the game on Saturday, you could see the respect that our former players had for Weakley. Like I watched Jackson Dietrich make a point of walking over to him and slapping him on the back. I watched Leo Falla talk with them. This is before the game started. Like right. You could see that there's a respect level that he has built up over time with various players that he's had interaction with. And that says to me, like it's not like he's not respected by other players, former players that are coming up to him, and it almost seemed like they were saying, "You got this," like to a point. And it was also funny to see Coach Weakley have to wear, like, he's usually like in shorts and a t-shirt at the games because he was like in his full, like, wearing slacks and all that stuff. I was like, "Oh, he does not look comfortable." The other thing that's funny for me, he actually coached my son's academy team last year, and he talked a lot on the sidelines when he was coaching my son's academy team, and he was practically silent with the pros. I was like, "Hey, what's going on here? You're fine with telling my 8-year-old you're out of position. Can you tell the 25-year-old he's out of position? That'd be great. Thanks."
Well, the last time we were in this situation, as far as for possibly not having a coach, that was fairly late in the first season, and there was only a few games left. We're in a situation where we're halfway through. And I get Alex's point about it's a little trickier right now because some of the good candidates are, you know, at least the local candidates are preparing for college and so forth. On the other end, those who could fill on that professional spot, because there's half a season left, I wonder if it's possible they would start looking now. Having said that, I was pleased with Coach Weakley, probably because of the team, and you had, you know, there was a, I think the leadership on the pitch did a lot, especially, you know, Capo and so forth, but there's only so much that's going to do week in, week out. So yeah, they had already prepped for this game. So yeah. I think this game is probably going to be a better indicator of how Coach Weakley is really going to prepare for a game.
So let's go a little bit deeper into the game versus Northern Colorado. Man, huge barn burner of a game, right?
Huge what?
Barn burner. It was, you know, shots galore from both sides. Oh, wait, no.
No, it was Jeff, one side of
it. Jeff, have you never burned barns? It's pretty exciting.
I'm part of a different summer cult.
I might have just incriminated myself. The one thing that stood out to me is, considering the semi-bombshell news that was dropped on Friday going into Saturday, they didn't look rattled. I think they played well. Our defense continued to improve. I thought there was some good connections in the midfield with passing, and we didn't finish our chances. And all of those are things that I would have said of a Red Wolves team that was being coached by Jimmy Oblata. So yeah, I think the players understood their job. Jimmy was listening, now he's turned us off. Sorry, coach.
Part of it is dumb luck on this game, because I'm not as upset with this as sometimes when we can't seem to get a shot, I get frustrated because of lack of creativity or we run out of steam. I can't fault the team on that, on this game. Generally speaking, we kept pushing, we kept attacking, we tried something different. I think our defense was fantastic. I think it's one of the best defensive games that we've had. Even though, yeah, they weren't as attacking as we were, but they didn't get – there weren't as many shots saved, but part of it is because our back line stopped it before it got there, and that's what you want. So I think that end was good, and it's not like, our wingers weren't pushing up or that Tonki's trying to get in position back and forth. It's just that it just didn't get in.
So we had 7 shots on goal, and I think that's an exaggeration, but that's what the stats say. They had 1, and that's kind of how the game felt. I didn't feel like they really scared us that often. They had a couple of shots that I guess aren't on goal because they were like 40 feet above the goal. I think they had a couple of those where you're like, whoa, that was bad. I remember one where the guy had a good breakaway and he just shanked the junk out of it. And I remember yelling something like, great shot! Like, it was so bad. But I never felt pressured. I really, really like Navarro and Timmy Mayle together. I think once Navarro gets a full 90 minutes in, he will also be candidates for those team of the weeks, because I think the two of them have really already shown their ability to settle that back area. A 1 goal, 0 goals between while they're back there in over about a little over 120 minutes when those two are paired together is a good sign, because it's not like we were playing teams that don't score in that scenario. And so I feel really good about that. I feel like there's a good chance we might get our full 90 of Navarro when we head to Omaha, because he's not going to have to run that much, as I love to make the joke, but it's an accurate statement. On that tiny 7v7 pitch, we'll have 2 advantages. One, Coach Weekly has been coaching 7-on-7 for a while now, so he's used to that size pitch. And number 2 is our guys aren't going to have to run as much, and we do have some guys that are still working their way back from injury. So I think those are 2 things that we can be excited about. But this last game, there's nothing to be excited about from this weekend. Like, it was a boring game. Like, the best part was the fireworks.
The fireworks were epic.
I would like to say Carlos Alvarez got robbed for save of the week. His save at the end of the game was pretty breathtaking. I think he's grown. He's starting to grow. You're seeing a lot more from him in goal, I would say. And Juan Galindrez had a couple of good runs. He had one was a breakaway. He should have scored. We should have won. But I think he's continuing to do well. I would like to see more from Alex Tejera and see if maybe we can get a little more of the forward going, maybe bring Juan in. It feels like all of our cardiac Red Wolves late game heroics were reverting to the mean, because when we got to about the 80th minute, I was like, well, this is a scoreless tie.
Yeah, I think you pegged it, though. We didn't bring in Alex Tejera until what, like the 90th minute? Like,
yeah,
it was super 93rd?
Late. Really? Yeah.
It was super late. Alex Fernandez came in obviously early on, and hopefully that is a very temporary small injury that happened there. But like, other than that, like, we didn't bring in real subs until like the 70th minute. And I just don't know. I would really like Tejera, or I'd really love to have, David Teixeira back to start. I just still feel like that we don't get the best out of Juan Galindrez as a starter. I think when he comes in, because his pace is just not, let's just be honest, his pace is not the greatest. But if he's going against guys that are on 80, 60, 70, 80 minute legs, he looks faster. But if he's also on 60, 70, 80 minute legs, he doesn't. And I would love for them to be able to figure out a way to flip that again. And that takes one of these guys, a Tejera or David Teixeira, to come back to take that starting role and make it theirs and to put him back in that position. I'd like Aaron Lombardi coming off the bench, because he's the change of pace guy that really has that ability. I like the idea of, he wasn't even on the team sheet, but like, Mo's the same way, right? Mo Espinoza.
Right.
Like, if both Mo and Lombardi are available off the bench with a Juan Galindrez, then you're getting those like fast, great crossing, a guy who likes to finish a good cross, change of pace, while you've been running through the middle with your Tejera or Teixeira or whoever it is in the middle instead of Juan Galindres. It is not a knock on Juan. It's just, in my opinion, a better use of him.
Yeah, I think when he's paired off with someone else who's a speedster, like we used to have with Markey, that's how some of our most successful games last year was Tanky coming in with Markey, and all of a sudden the game was just ripped apart. I at first was thinking I'd like to see Lombardi the whole match, but I see your point, especially after this match. He does bring such a spark. And so, yeah, we have those type of players, but, yeah, I think the time of it is important. But I don't think we've had the other forwards, or at least the other strikers, healthy enough to pull that. So I think Tanky's done well playing the whole game. He, actually, one of the ones he played the whole game, he got a hat trick. But, yes, I think he is better when he comes in the second half.
I think we've taken the last couple games very pragmatically. This is the first two-game stretch in a while where we've not had a loss. And so I think we're trying to build on that. We've got the defense that we want now, and I think we're trying to build on that more. And it'll be interesting to see what happens on the youth field in the cornfield and what they'll be able to do. Why don't we turn ourselves to that game? What do you guys think we're going to see from Omaha, who I believe is playing tonight? Is that correct?
No, they played last night to a 0-0 tie. In Madison, Wisconsin, actually the largest crowd to watch a game for Forward Madison, and it was a midweek game for, so great for them.
Wow.
And they got to watch a really, 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 like if you thought our game on Saturday was just excruciatingly boring, there was a total of 2 shots on goal.
Couldn't have happened to nicer people.
Yeah.
But they looked fabulous.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, they've got plenty of kits to choose from. They also had, that was not the only Forward Madison versus Union Omaha game that was actually held. They also have, and my mind is blanking on what it's called, but it's for the players with disabilities, unified teams. Oh. And they both had a unified team match after the game, and that went 2-0 for Forward Madison over Union. So that was really cool as well to see them doing that. So kudos to them for that. That's awesome. But yeah, it was an excruciatingly boring game. There was a lot of fouls called. And if you listen to some of the talk in like USL Discord and stuff from both Forward and Union fans, like agreeing with each other, this was a USL League One foul fest. That, in other words, they weren't really fouls, but they're USL League One refs. So it was, there was 18 fouls by Union Omaha, 16 by Forward Madison, 5 yellow cards to Union Omaha, 4 to Forward Madison.
So, and you know that if that's the case, is that probably a half of those on either side weren't really fouls. Yeah. And there's probably 16 fouls combined that the referee didn't call.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And he probably,
that's what really makes it the worst, is that they get so caught on themselves, blowing the whistle, completely clogging a game with stuff that's just ticky-tack, no one cares about. And then when the actual fouls happen, they just completely overmatched and stare at it and wet themselves.
Well, as a reminder, soccer games are only 90 minutes long. Okay. So to reach 34 fouls, that's, that's more than a foul every 3 minutes. Like, and it usually takes about 30 to 45 seconds to set up after a foul. So it's possible there was literally a whistle blown every other minute of actual play in this game. Like, so bad. So bad. And then you're right. More than likely, he also gave out 2 or 3 yellow cards that were where he does this whole point, point, point. And the guy's like, I've been playing fullback. Why are you pointing to the forward position, you dummy? Because these guys are, they're terrible. And it's excruciating to watch. And I did try to watch some of it legitimately because I wanted to. I was like, okay, we're going to be playing Union on Wednesday. Let me see what this looks like when we go play them on Saturday. And you couldn't watch it. It was just, it was really bad. I felt bad for their fans, and I don't like Forward Madison fans. And I felt bad for their fan base because that is so boring. I've turned to you, Alex, before when we were at a game because we sit in the same area. We've had the foul fest where it doesn't feel like it's truly fouls. It's just a ref blowing their whistle. And like, I can't do this anymore. Like, this is terrible.
If I have to watch one more referee walk up to a player after trying to win a ball and overexerting himself and start tapping his head about being smart. Like, yeah, he's being smart. He's playing hard. And when they play hard, sometimes they're going to leave their foot out and they're going to trip someone and foul them. That's just part of the game. That's why you're there. You don't need to tap your head and tell them to be smart. They're playing smart. Otherwise, they would have broken the guy's ankle.
I think this is the other part that they struggle with, is that a yellow card is meant for basically two reasons, right? Dangerous play or a foul that is meant to basically stop an offensive possession. That's it. And they like to give it out for fouls that they thought were ugly or that were like really rough, but they weren't dangerous, right? Like, I can't think of how many times like they've had where players hit each other. They both jump for a ball, but one of the players that weighs 75 pounds less than the other guy and goes flying, and a yellow card comes flying out either direction against the Red Wolf or against the other team we're playing against. And I'm like, that's not a yellow card. That's just two people hitting each other. That's not even a foul.
Was a couple weeks ago in the game in Tormenta where Aaron Lombardi slammed his head into the Tormenta guy's shoulder, gave himself a concussion, and got a yellow card for it. I don't think he gave himself a concussion because he continued to play. But it was this like incredibly brutal, the Tormenta player leaning into Lombardi, and he gave a yellow card to Lombardi for the foul. It was like, what are you watching?
Yeah. So we got our obligatory "we hate the refs" line in as we started our Union Omaha focus. So let's look at how they lined up versus Ford. Soccer Chat was up starting at the front, Alex Bruce. I look at this lineup, and the only thing on here when I look at their full lineup that worries me is in goal. I don't look at this lineup and think this is a team I have to worry about scoring a bunch. Like, there's no one on here that I think to myself, yeah, that guy's really good. Like, there's a reason Alex Bruce has played for like every team in League One.
Except ours. When's that going to happen, by the way?
I don't know. They're purposely avoiding it. It's the only logical decision. Yeah, but when you look at that lineup, is there anyone on there that you say, I need to be worried about this guy because I think he's going to cause possible impact to this team?
No, I think you're right. I think it's Rashid Nuhu, and that's about it. And that's kind of the thing, and it's part of what makes me furious about Union Omaha, is they are a team that knows they have a really good goalkeeper. They have a field that is below league specifications, but the league is too afraid to call them on it. And so they have their really good goalkeeper make a save, hold the ball for 45 seconds, and then punt it three quarters of the length of the field. And all they have to do is score one goal. They know their keeper's good enough to keep them close. And they spend the rest, as soon as they can get their goal, they spend the rest of the time laying on the ball.
Yeah, and granted, they did very well. You know, everyone knows about their run in the U.S. Open Cup. But, you know, they've played 15 matches and scored 16 goals. That's not great. They haven't scored a goal in league play since they played Tucson, where they did score two goals against Tucson. Tucson game was very interesting in that Union Omaha actually got a red card in the 30th minute and was up 1-0. And then Tucson got a red card in the 61st minute, yet they still tied it up at 1-1 in the 68th. And then Soccer Chat came in the extra time and scored the winner for them. But so they won that one 2-1. But honestly, they're just not scoring a lot. And I think we need to take advantage of that. And this is one of the few times, even though I just went on a rant earlier about that, I don't feel like we should be having Tanke start up top. This is one of the few times it makes sense, right? He's not going to have to run around a lot of places. And he's a possession style guy up top. So I'm hopeful that plays out well for us. The thing that does scare me is we like to play out of the back, and playing out of the back in a small field is very risky because they're going to be able to press and automatically be on defense since there's nowhere to run to. All right, Jeff, what do you got?
Well, our team is, when it rains, it pours. And it's either going to be we're going to get nothing and they're going to get nothing, or we're going to open up the faucet. And I don't think there's a middle ground. We're either going to get a bunch of goals or it's going to be another snooze fest. So it really has to do on link up. Maybe this different size field or the smaller field is going to be an advantage, like you mentioned, for Tanky. I'm really happy that with the performance that Rafa's been doing, I think this is a field he will do very well in. If we have a chance to have Alex start, I think yes. I think that works out really well. Having said that, the only real threat they have is their keeper. And sorry, Connor, but I mean, the rest of the team, I'm like, we like him. I mean, you know, he used to play for us. You know, he got rid of the man bun, so he's got a little more respect for me this year. But it's but no, seriously, I mean, they have an epic goalkeeper, one of the best in the league. No questions. But you know, there's nothing on the rest of the team that I'm seeing that really scares me. So really, I think it's up to us. It depends which Red Wolves show up. If we show up like we've had the capacity to, we link up, we could knock in 3-4 goals. Or we get another nil-nil. I don't see a loss outside of maybe they get one lucky one. I'm hoping what we're seeing Carlos play in the last couple of games is where we're moving towards. He's got the capacity, like any keeper does, to drop it a bit, but I think our defense is getting much better. So it's either going to be nil or it's going to be 3-0.
So they've had 6 of their 15 games where they've scored nothing. As you pointed out very well, we are very hit or miss as well. I actually like us being on the road for this game. I like the fact that the players will get away from Chattanooga. They'll get away from the reminding surroundings of being around where Coach Ableda had been, and the fact that it's different and that it hasn't been Ableda running practices all week. And I think they're going to be loose. I really do. I think one thing that Weekly is going to be very different than Ableda is he's not going to be screaming at them. I think partly, I'm being fully honest, a number of our players are not super fluent in English, and Weekly is not super fluent in Spanish. I've talked to some players that have basically said he seems to understand, but they're having to translate some of the stuff he's saying to some players because they don't know English as well. The vast majority.
That's also what he had to do with Adam while he was coaching Adam's son. People had to interpret Jimmy's English to Adam.
Yeah, because Jimmy's English is from Chattanooga and I'm from, you know, places where they speak normal English. But no, I mean, ultimately, like, I think there is something too that there's a language barrier to a point there where he's able to give them direction at the beginning of the game, have translation when necessary with some of the few players. Like I said, there's probably, I'd say, 5 players from what I understand on the team that don't speak English. They either speak strictly Portuguese or strictly Spanish. There's also like 6 or 7 players that speak English, Spanish, and Portuguese. So they're way ahead of me. I do think there is something to that, and that at halftime he'll give adjustments so he can give it, and it allows them to be loose on the field. So I think it's going to result in a 2-0 win.
I am more inclined to another scoreless draw. I need to see these guys get out on the field and prove to me that they're loose, that they're coming together. I feel like the defense is looking better and can hold up. I am afraid at how we like to play those long diagonal balls. There just isn't room for it. And so I think that field doesn't set up well to the way that we normally play. And maybe hopefully with some of these other players healthy, we can start seeing a little more variety in how we build up and how we go at it, because you're just going to have to on that field. It's not as wide, so that it doesn't look as obvious that it's far shorter than it should be. And we just don't have the room to isolate someone out on the wing and try to get people in the box. It's not gonna work building up the wing as much if you can at least mix in through the middle every now and then. So we'll have to see how that goes.
All right, so do you guys want to talk about the game that follows this, or do you want to save that for like a reaction quick preview pod next week?
Ooh, maybe we bring back Off the Post on Saturday.
This game's going to be Central Time Zone. But, I mean, it's up to you.
Maybe we do Off the Post Sunday afternoon.
There you go, because I'm going to get nasty.
There you go. All right, so that's what we'll plan on. We'll talk about the results of this Saturday match on the following Sunday, so keep your eyes out for that. And we'll also give a preview of what we think is going to happen in our upcoming midweek match versus Central Valley Fuego. And so on that note, there are some other things going on. Red Wolves wide, from Academy through some of the League 2 teams, and I thought I'd give Nunya Business over there a chance to tell us a little bit about that.
So I wanted to give a quick shout out. The USL Academy League has started this year. We have a team playing with it from the Chattanooga Red Wolves Academy. It is a U19, so these are all 17, 18, maybe a few 16-year-old players who have come through the Academy. They are coached by a name you might recognize. It is John Milracy, who was the head coach of Tormenta the first couple of years that they were with USL League One. So now he's here working with some of our academy kids on a part-time basis. And they are 5-0 so far this summer. The season runs all the way through November, but they have started with that perfect record. I believe tonight they are down in Tormenta taking on the Tormenta Academy. Probably going to be a pretty big game and hoping that things go well for them there. But stuff is looking bright with some of those players that are part of that academy. They've had a few of them. I've had opportunities to go train with the first team, things like that. So that's great. They're going to start sometime, I think, in the spring or fall. U15 and U13 parts of that USL Academy. So they'll have teams of those younger kids as well that kind of have a chance to shine. Park City also is playing in the Western Conference of this USL Academy League. They're having a good season too, not undefeated like the Chattanooga side, but still doing well. And the Park City USL 2 team won their conference again this year. However, went out to the Southern California Seahorses in the first round of USL League 2 playoffs. Great season for them. Congrats to the coach who we had on as a guest. Was a fantastic guest when we talked to them about U.S. Open Cup. And hope that they have a good off season and continue building up a pretty good, strong pipeline there in that Park City Academy. We've had lots of people come out of it. It's been a really good addition to the Red Wolves family.
Should mention, you mentioned South Georgia Tormenta. Just while before it exits my brain, their women's team won the inaugural USLW League this year. So congratulations to you. I raised my Sprite, and that's all you're going to get, Tormenta, is my Sprite raised.
Congrats to them. They were a very competitive team. The Lady Red Wolves, of course, missed out to them by 1 point in the standings. Yeah. Were very even team. They were very good. They had a goalkeeper who, she should be a professional soccer goalkeeper in NWSL or USLS League at some point. She's very good, about as tall as Adam, way more athletic. People should give her a look.
So there was also a recent interview that was done about various USL things, and the USL Super League was mentioned in that interview. And I'm blanking on the name of the place it was interviewed, but it was another one of the interviews with the USL CEO about like what are their plans and such. And he mentioned something I thought was interesting, is that the USL Super League, when it begins, will be on the international calendar. They will not be following the US calendar for their league. So that is something that he just basically released in that interview. Like, hey, that's the plan. He mentioned that, you know, as always, he dropped the same stuff he always does, right? We hope to do something with ProRel, and we hope to have some sort of, you know, cup that's just the USL type cup between Championship and League One. All these things we hope to have before 26. He also gave the classic disclaimer that COVID always messes up some of those plans and delayed some stuff. And you also mentioned some things about sizes of the two leagues. He says he expects championship to be right around 36 teams, and he expects USL League One to do the same in hopes of having two split conferences. He also seemed to reference that those split conferences would be in which way they would do their pro rel. So something where, you know, a team out of the West goes up, a team out of the West goes down, a team out of the East goes up, a team out of the East goes down, that type of thing. So that there isn't a balance issue there. So some interesting insight to tell that you, they're definitely more than just talking about it. And I wish I wasn't so terrible at my job and could actually have the name of that, interview guys for you, but I don't. And then going back,
if you actually post this episode, it's an improvement over what your summer's been like. So
hey, I posted the last episode, it's something. Going back to the USL Academy, the Red Wolves Academy is in there with, as you mentioned, South Georgia Tormenta, but some other teams that you may recognize, right? Birmingham Legion of Championship is in there. East Atlanta FC, which is a USL 2 team. Peachtree City MOBA, which plays, which has played, I think they're in USLW this year, right?
Yes, Peachtree and the Southern Soccer Academy.
Yeah, and Southern Soccer Academy Kings. Those three teams are USL League 2 as well as USLW teams, right? So good to see tons of representatives from the various levels of USL. And I think it shows that USL isn't saying, well, our championship academies are better than our League One or better than our League Two academies. They're basically saying, listen, they're academies within USL, and we want to create an atmosphere where these teams can compete. And having three teams from Atlanta, where there is a much larger population than Chattanooga, right? Having a team for Birmingham, you know, a team from South Georgia, team obviously from Chattanooga, it gives some balance to that Southeast and also allows them to really get a chance to play against some top talent. Just from an academy parent standpoint, those tournaments that we go to that are in Atlanta, those are tough.
Yeah. Right?
And there are so many academies in the Atlanta area. And so for our academy to be competing against really three of the top academies in the Atlanta area and doing well, it's something they should really be excited about and really hang their hats on how well they've done.
All right. Well, quick shout out. All of our friends in Biggleswade are going through preseason, so we'll be back with the Biggleswade report here very soon. Looking forward to those as they get their season started. We actually added a fan. There's a player who was signed to Biggleswade Town who played college soccer at Fairleigh Dickinson in New Jersey. And one of a local scout in the Connecticut area has jumped on the Biggleswade Town bandwagon with us. So welcome aboard. And we'll look forward to the Biggleswade reports here in a few weeks.
Very cool. Excellent. And on that note, bye.
Bye.
So bad.
That's it.
Drink my bourbon.
Get off my lawn.
Alone in the dark, like a man.
That may be how we end the podcast. It's just you saying, I drink my bourbon alone in the dark like a man. In fact, that is how, be prepared, that is how it's going to end. All right.
That's one for the commercial, too.
I drink my bourbon alone in the dark.
We don't have a budget for commercials, guys.
Like a man.
In a world where he drinks bourbon alone, one man will take on the system and complain about USL League One refs to no avail, because complaining does nothing.